The lady wife, like most members of her sex, which is female, has an inordinate number of birthdays. As she grows older, these are undoubtedly increasing in frequency. Indeed, I'm of the opinion that she is now celebrating as many as one per annum. This year, I suppose, she will have a birthday on the Saturday of the Lord's Test. She usually does. And as always, when she informs me of the impending approach of this frightful event, I shall look at her and I shall think to myself, why? 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 Why on earth did I ever marry her? Certainly there was a physical attraction, that I cannot deny. I remember to this day the surge of emotion that coursed through my veins when I first caught sight of her. The rose garden at dear old Castle Arlott, slumbering with honey-laden bees. The benno bush aflame in scarlet bloom. The phlox lacariensis flowering hazily, lazily, benignly blue. And into my view she glided. A tall, slim, sylph-like figure in purest white. My heart missed a beat. The sap rose in my loins. Dear God, she was the spitting image of Herbert Sutcliffe. It was love at first sight. Call it the impetuosity of youth, if you will, but remember, I had been out of the country for many years, serving my king and country in some of the remotest and most primitive outposts of his empire. I had not seen a first-class county cricketer for 7 years. I was desperate. I was bewitched. I was overwhelmed. We married that autumn in the exquisite little Saxon church at Witney Scrotum. And as we walked down the aisle, arm in arm, embarking upon a career of conjugal concomitance, I felt for all the world as Percy Holmes must have felt, walking out to open the innings for Yorkshire at 6:05 on a grey, chill September evening at Trent Bridge, with Harold Larwood glowering and snarling in the gloom at the Radcliffe Road end. Our marriage, I'm bound to say, has not been all gloom and misery. There have been moments of radiant happiness and unrestrained joy when it seems that the earth has moved and the heavenly choirs have burst into anthems of passion, and in the soft afterglow I've turned to my wife and said, right, it's your go now, but remember, you mustn't move your legs. She always was a duffer at French cricket. There have been moments, too, when the chores of nuptial incumbency have been enlightened by occasions of solemn levity. In this context, I recall with particular pleasure an afternoon at Cheltenham. My wife, as she approached her prime, grew to look more and more like that great Gloucestershire all-rounder T.W. Goddard. It was a source of much pride and satisfaction to me, none more so than on that sun-dappled post-prandial session at the Cheltenham Festival, when we were sitting with friends, idly nibbling chilled zoobs and sipping our mulled Chateau Dipper. Our peace and serenity was rudely disturbed when the Gloucestershire skipper, Mr. B.O. Allen, strode up to us angrily, pointed an accusatory finger at the lady wife, and said in a most hectoring manner, "Goddard, what in the name of blitheration are you doing there, sitting dressed in women's togs? Get yourself off to the dressing room this instant." Well, this the lady wife did. And at the end of the day, she had the satisfaction of returning home, having taken 7 Leicestershire wickets at a cost of a mere 17 runs. But moments such as these have been rare indeed in our marriage. How many nights have I lain awake in bed with soft owls hooting and whiskers of rain snarling at the windowpane, and I've raised myself on one arm and looked down on the slumbering form of the lady wife, and I've thought to myself, oh God, I wish you were someone else. Admitted, dear friends, I'm not alone in these thoughts. How many of you, while engaged in the most intimate activity in which man and wife can be involved, have closed your eyes and thought to yourself at the moment of delivery, by jingo, I wish you were the Nawab of Patori. How many of you have not craved for the warm, passionate propinquity of a Fred Rumsey or the soft, whispered blandishments of a David Bairstow? Certainly, with me, it is the physical side of things which have proved most irksome in my marriage. I'm convinced, for example, that it was those bi-monthly Friday night sessions with the light out which were the ultimate cause of a serious weakness in my spinning finger and an inability to achieve a consistent full length. Nothing will dissuade me from the view that had I not been married to the lady wife, I should have opened the innings for England, captained the gentlemen against the players, and in the fullness of time, achieved the greatest honour any cricketer can attain to, being granted an audience of Mr. E.R. Dexter. Friends tell me that circumstances might have been different had the lady wife and I had issue. Well, who can say? Was Joe Hardstaff Sr. a happier man for having produced Joe Hardstaff Jr.? What gave Mr. and Mrs. Gibbs more satisfaction? Producing one of the finest off-spinners the world has ever known, or inventing toothpaste? Would it have been a consolation to Mr. Neville Chamberlain in the darkest days after Munich to know that one day his son, Tosh, would play outside left for Fulham? I think not. I'm reminded of a dear and precious friend of mine who produced a family of truly extravagant proportions. I met him in the long room at Lord's shortly after the birth of yet another of his progeny. His mien was downcast. His face was bleak. "Well," I said, "what is it this time?" He looked at me silently for a moment, and then he muttered savagely, "Another bloody leg spinner." I'm bound to confess, in fairness, however, that in certain matters of a domestic nature, the lady wife has been of help to me. It was her handiwork with needle and thread, which on many occasions has saved me from the distress of having to take a well-loved jockstrap to the vet to be put down. Her dexterity on the fretwork machine saved me from the considerable expense of replacing a sight screen, groundsman's hut, and portable ablutions facility destroyed under circumstances which even now I find too painful to recall. No, weighing the pros and cons of our marriage in the balance, it is evident to me that, but for the frequency of her birthdays, the lady wife might have become a reasonably tolerable companion. I will go further. It is not the birthdays per se which have caused me such discomfort. It is the necessity of purchasing presents which I've found so damnable. No sooner has the wretched thing been handed over at the breakfast table than one is compelled to enter once more the nauseous and time-consuming palaver of thinking of a suitable gift for the next birthday. It would not be so irksome if the lady wife were to show even a modicum of gratitude for my offering. "Oh, crumbs, not another one," is her customary reaction. "Why can't you think of something original for a change?" Well, what the lady wife fails to appreciate is that the shop at Lord's does not have an inexhaustible supply of novelties. Lord, she already has 3 different versions of the Gubby Allen toilet bag. I simply refuse to pay out good money in purchasing yet another Alec Bedser pyjama case. Stubbornly and steadfastly, the lady wife refuses to believe that the Ken Higgs negligees and the gift-wrapped bottles of Oda Washbrook are invariably snapped up by MCC committee members long before the shop opens for its summer season. How different it would all be if my wife were not to have birthdays. How different indeed it would be if no one were to have birthdays. If life were to become a timeless test, if we were to be spared the death and decay which comes to all from the relentless passing of the years, would the world not be a better place today if Jack Hobbs were still wielding his silken willow? Our city streets still rang to the echoes of cart-horse hooves clopping on preening cobbles, and Mr. Stainless Stephen still tickled our chuckle muscles on our faithful cat's whisker. Would not life be richer today if Spoffers and WG were still engaged in mortal combat, and the endless sunshine of the Golden Age lit up in its radiance the bleakness and despair of this age of Cold War, Nancy Boys, and aluminium bats? But no, dear friends, these are but the pipe dreams of an old man. Let us be happy with what we have. I look now with surprising affection on the lady wife as she sits in our oak-timbered drawing-room, her needles flashing in the flames of the log fire as she knits yet another set of nets for Mr. Alf Gover's indoor cricket school. And I think to myself, grow old in your own time, my dear. Let the silver mingle with the gold. Let us give succor and comfort to each other as our innings draws inexorably to its close. But when you next have a birthday, for pity's sake, let it be on the second day of Minor Counties versus Indian Tourists.